So, welcome to the quantum gravity course, which is supposed to be 6 weeks, but who knows? So this is a course on quantum gravity. Okay, I have one thing to say. You can eat your bagel today, but I'm not very fond of people eating in front of me in the morning. So it's a course on a subject which is not finished, which is not a finished theory. And you can ask, why does it take so long? By now, the idea of trying to construct a theory of quantum gravity is roughly 100 years old. and one reason is that gravity is a force which is quite different from the other three forces. So as Einstein talked us, gravity is rather encoded in the geometry of space-time. And so if you want to have quantum gravity, you need something like a quantum geometry. And actually, quantum space-time. So what we have a good understanding of is quantum geometry, which here I will mostly understand as a quantization of geometric observables. But in a sense, it's on a kinematical level. So it does give us a geometry of space, or the quantum geometry of space, in a very nice way, and at least in four dimensions. This question of dynamics is still quite an open one. So in these lectures, we will actually consider the three-dimensional theory, mostly because it's actually much simpler, so one can do much more in the short time given to us. But all the kinematical features are basically very similar, almost the same, between three dimensions and four dimensions. Now, why is it so difficult? That's why. I can see my blackboard. So the main point here is quantum space-time. So it's quite different from, again, all the other theories where we have quantum field theories, but on a fixed space-time. We have fixed coordinates, we have a fixed metric, and usually it's a Minkowski metric. We have nice symmetries of Minkowski metric. And if you look at all the things which go into standard quantum field theory, like Poincaré symmetry, which selects your vacuum, the notion of energy, the notion of momenta, coordinates, and so on. So these are all not there in gravity and in quantum gravity. And even a notion such as space-time point is not available in quantum gravity or quantum space-time. So that has, there's kind of lots of conceptual questions about quantum space-time and what should that be. And so in these lectures, we will follow a canonical quantization program and then actually covariant quantization program for two reasons. It's to show that covariant and canonical quantizations are actually the same in this case in three dimensions, or can be the same. And canonical quantization allows you nicely to discuss these conceptual aspects and observables and spectra of observables and so on. Okay, so much about the conceptual aspects. So what we will do in these lectures is mostly 3D gravity. And it's not simple enough yet. Actually, with Euclidean signature. So one reason is that the technicalities with Euclidean signature are then the same as in 4D, even with Lorentzian signature. And so the other reason is that, as we will see, we will rewrite 3D gravity into an SU2 gauge theory, and you might have had some examples of that. Or if you're going to the Chern-Simons course, that's also a formulation of 3D gravity, formulated as a different kind of gauge theory. SU2 is a very nice group because it's compact. Whereas if I would do Lorentzian signature, we would have to deal with SL2R. And the case of SL2R is much more involved. And we would have to spend like a semester on SL2R. Okay, so actually, the plan of the lecture is that we start with. apparently, that's my course introduction. Actions for gravity. So as you might have encountered, actions are very central object for the description for deriving the equations of motion and in particular for quantization. So there's canonical quantization, which works with the Hamiltonian and so on, and we will go through this formulation. But also the Hamiltonian you usually derive from an action. And there's path integral quantization, in which the action is even more central. There's actually usually quite different action formulations for the same theory. And gravity is one case, both in 3D and 4D, where you have many different formulations for the same theory. So there are, actually, I should not exactly say this is the same theory, because there are subtle differences, and which one to take is still a matter of discussion. So what we will first consider is an action which I hope you have seen before, because it's the Einstein-Hilbert action. And we will consider it in four dimensions first, or actually mostly will be in general the dimensions, what we will do here. Thank you. So it's Euclidean signature, so I don't have a minus here. Anyone not knowing what the Ricci scalar is? So we have the Ricci scalar here. Kappa is a coupling constant, but we will set kappa equal to 1. So I don't have to write any kappas. So let's actually vary the action, because that's how we get the equations of motion. And so here we have to we have first to determine what our basic variables are in the action. And we choose actually the inverse metric, G mu. We can also choose just the metric as an exercise. So let's vary this action with respect to the inverse metric. And here we have that the Ricci scalar is the Ricci tensor contracted with the inverse metric. So if you do that, we get 3 terms. One term is directly the variation of of the inverse metric. The other term is variation of the Ricci tensor. And then we have a term which is the variation of the determinant. Square root of the determinant. So we need to know the variation of the Ricci tensor and the variation of the square root of the determinant. Okay, who of you knows how to vary the determinant? Use this trick. So I will give you these results. I will explain the tricks which you can use to compute the variation of the determinant. Here, use also you can use a certain technique. You can write it out explicitly, but you can also take a shortcut. I do think you probably discussed it in the gravity course. but if not, you can actually read up on it. Or Aldo might do a tutorial about it, which I don't know what he decides. So here you have a term which is a variation of the Ricci tensor contracted with the inverse metric. And using the so-called Pollatini equations, which come from going to a special coordinate system, which are the Riemann normal coordinates around the point P, which is which are defined that the coordinates are such that at this point P, the Christoffel symbols vanish. And so many of the formulas for instance, for the Riemann tensor do simplify. And that one then uses is that the variation of the Christoffel symbols is a tensor. So these are tensors. The difference between two connections actually transforms the tensor, whereas the Christoffel symbol itself, which is a connection, transforms as a connection, which is as this usual tensor law plus some affine term. It takes the difference of two connections. This affine term vanishes. And so one can derive equations in this Riemann normal coordinates. And then one uses that all quantities appearing there are tensors. And so one can conclude that they also work in the in all coordinates. So using these tricks, you can actually quite systematically figure out the variation of all kinds of curvature terms if you wanted to, with a bit of work. And a very special thing here is what happens is that the variation of the Riemann tensor actually is something which involves the Riemann tensor involves second derivatives. And usually we don't have second derivatives in the action. Usually you have first derivatives in the action. But these terms with second derivatives drop out because this turns out to be a total divergence. So this means it's already total divergence. So this gives you even more details on the variation here. And so this is a covariant total divergence. So if you integrate it with the determinant of square root of the determinant of G over a manifold without boundaries, this term vanishes. So I'm discussing here also a manifold M without, compact manifold M without boundaries. Okay, so this fact makes actually the gravity action quite special. If you add other curvature terms like r squared, this will not happen. And so these actions usually lead to sometimes different numbers of variables. So the Einstein-Hilbert action is a very special action in this regard. So this will integrate to zero. So we are left to with the variation of the square root of g, which by the chain rule is 1/2 1 over square root of g, the variation of the determinant of g. Let me just give the result and tell you later how to derive that. So what happens for a determinant G, you usually get here again the determinant of G, and then you get the trace of the matrix. Here you get a minus sign because this is the determinant of G menu with indices down, but we express it with the inverse matrix. So using B, and we can put it back into the variation of the action. We use that this term vanishes. So you will get Einstein equations, not very surprisingly. So you get R mu nu from this term, and then minus 1/2 R G mu nu. From the variation of the determinant. So you find that this has to be 0. And if you take the trace of this equation and subtract it from the equation itself, you find that this is implies that the Ricci tensor is 0, which is a vacuum equation for GR. So okay. So let's discuss the variation of the determinant. Anyone remembers how the determinant is defined?
Sorry, the variation of the determinant?
So that's a question. I mean, do you want me to derive this formula for the variation of the determinant, or do you know it?
You did it in GR.
Okay, so you did it. So there are some formulas which will come again, so I will skip that. So if you need to remember that, you have to read it up. So we have R menu is equal to 0. So I have derived it in four dimensions. but actually the dimension never played a role, except from here to here. But from here to here, it's only special in two dimensions. So the point is, if I would have taken a three-dimensional case, it would have been exactly the same derivation. And so one basically defines. I mean, you can ask, what is actually 3D gravity? So 3D gravity is defined as first, in the classical case, 3D kind of Einstein-Hilbert gravity in some sense, as the theory you get from the Einstein-Hilbert action in 3D. So it would be just the same action defined on a three-dimensional manifold. And so we also get the vacuum equation. That Ricci tensor is vanishing. Now there's an important difference between three dimensions and four dimensions. So in three, as you know, the curvature is actually encoded in the Riemann tensor, which has four indices. And so in four dimensions, the Riemann tensor has more information than in three dimensions, than the Ricci tensor. In three dimensions, the Riemann tensor is completely determined by the Ricci tensor. You can actually write the Riemann tensor as a linear combination of the Ricci tensor. It is a very, it's a longish formula, which is not very instructive. So to see that, this really implies that the Riemann tensor is zero. We will do counting of degrees of freedom in the Ricci tensor and in the Riemann tensor, which actually doesn't tell you exactly why it's zero, but it's just the motivation that it's zero. to count the degrees of freedom, we have to remember that the Riemann tensor, at least if it comes from the Levi-Civita connection, satisfies the number of symmetries. Anyone remembers?
First two indices and the other two indices.
Yeah, so the symmetries are these two are antisymmetric. These two are antisymmetric. And if you permute these two pairs, they're actually symmetric. So in the Ricci tensor here is symmetric. So if you count in 3D how many entries does a symmetric 3x3 tensor have? Okay, how many tensors has a rank 2 antisymmetric tensor in 3D?
Three.
Yeah, it's 3. I mean, you have it from the symmetric. You have the diagonal, which is 3, but this has to be 0. And in fact, you can convert any kind of mu nu antisymmetric index in 3D by using an epsilon mu nu rho. So that means that practically you just have one index here. We have 3 here, 3 here, which is basically the same as 3 here, 3 here. But these have to be symmetric again, so you also get 6. So you see that you have the same number of degrees of freedom in these two tensors. and indeed, it's a case that if the Ricci tensor is zero, the Riemann tensor is zero. Because you can actually write in 3D the Riemann tensor as a linear combination, you know, there's signs and so on, and basically what you have is different combinations of R mu nu and G rho sigma with different permutation of indices and also terms which, again, you can see as being defined by the Ricci tensor because it's just the Ricci scalar. Again, a different permutation. So if you want to know the formula, you have to check the definition of Y tensor and set the Y tensor to 0, and then you find actually this exact combination of things. So we do have that actually that the curvature vanishes. So in 3D, the equation of motion basically tells us that space-time has to be flat. So there are many matrix, 3D, many matrix which give you flatness. But as you might have heard, actually flatness is one kind of, actually, at least locally, one kind of matrix. And so all these matrix are actually locally diffeomorphism equivalent. So you might think then, okay, 3D gravity is quite boring. But in fact, if you consider the topology of a manifold, then there can be degrees of freedom, but these will be global degrees of freedom. So if you consider 3D gravity on non-trivial manifolds, like a three torus, then there can be non-trivial degrees of freedom, which tell you some global degrees of freedom. For instance, the length of geodesics which wind around the torus. So the entire concept here is 3D gravity. It turns out to be a topological quantum field theory. Again, if you go to the Chern-Simons course, that's also a topological quantum field theory. And so what happens, you start with an action which on the face of it has lots of degrees of freedom, because a priori you have the three-dimensional matrix, which again we counted has 6 degrees of freedom. but then it turns out that that all these degrees of freedom are basically killed by the symmetries of the theory. So this symmetry is a diffeomorphic symmetry and will play a key role in the quantization of gravity, because it turns out that so far we have not completely under control, not in 4D, in 3D we can actually, how to reconcile diffeomorphic symmetry with quantization. But we will come to the symmetries of gravity and what that means, in particular these are gauge symmetries, in due course. Okay. So so I introduced the Einstein-Hilbert action. And actually we have written the equations of motion, but it's actually quite hard to see that it's a topological quantum field theory, or that the equation of motion imply flatness, because here we use these funny counting of degrees of freedom. So it turns out that there's a much simpler action, which we are actually getting the equation of motion will be almost trivial, and which will be the basis of the quantization we do. And that will be the Palatini action. And actually, sometimes it's called triad or tetrad. So if you're in 3D, it's a triad Palatini action. And so what we need to first introduce is triads or tetrads. So I will have most of the discussion for general dimensions. And so the first thing we are doing is to replace the matrix with a so-called frame field. E mu i, where I is a so-called internal index, and it runs also from 1 to 3. Mu is also space-time index, so I think here you can make it to run from 0 to 2 or from 1 to 3. I think I will use 1 to 3, whatever comes to that, or yeah, we will see what I will use. So this frame field is giving you for each spacetime point p three vectors. Which give you a basis in your tangent space. And so the point about this basis is that we require it to be orthonormal. And via this orthonormality condition, we encode all the metric information. In this frame field. So we require this condition. Here, I already introduced a frame vector where I have pulled an index down. So to convince yourself that the frame field really encodes the metric, we introduce the inverse coframe. It's called cotetrit sometimes. Which is defined as the triad where you pull down the index with the matrix, and you pull up this index with the internal matrix or the internal inverse matrix, which is just the Kronecker delta. So actually, we can be quite liberal where we position these internal indices. If you have Minkowski signature, you should take here the Minkowski metric, and then you have to be more careful with respect to signs, of course. So once you have that, you can also show that using this semicolon, not a G, using this definition, you can regain the metric from the tetrad by contracting the inverse triads with respect to the internal index, and then you are left with the space-time metric here. So you also see that this automatically defines a symmetric tensor. It has one nice property if you do that if you rewrite gravity with respect to this triad, which is if you do have the metric, and say we are considering Euclidean signature. Then we should actually require that the metric has Euclidean signature. Namely that the determinant of G is either positive or semi-positive. which in quantum gravity will make quite an important difference. And that's not a nice condition which talks to quantum theory, if you have ever discussed in quantum mechanics how to quantize a particle on a half line, you might remember or you might know that it's quite subtle to impose this condition that x has to be bigger than zero. Here, if you write the g as the square of something, you get automatically this at least semi-positivity. Another aspect which we have here is that, as we have seen, metric tensor has 6 degrees of freedom. This one, how many degrees of freedom has this one?
9.
It's a general, a priori, it's a general tensor of rank 3 times 3. There is no symmetry imposed. So this has 9 degrees of freedom. So indeed, we have shown that the metric is determined by the triads here. But the triad is not determined by a metric. So what you can do here, if you have one orthonormal frame, you can act with a rotation in these indices. So here you can put in two rotation matrices. I have to write the correct indices. And if you do that, they will cancel out because it's unitary and even real. So it will actually cancel out with its adjoint. And so you still get the same 3D metric from triads which are connected with each other with a rotation. So we will have a rotation symmetry. And since basically all things we are interested in come from the matrix, this will be also a symmetry, which is a gauge symmetry. That is, this choice of rotation will not change our physical content. And these are the three-dimensional rotation. Again, that has 3 degrees of freedom in some sense. So that gets us down from 9 degrees of freedom to 6 degrees of freedom. Okay. Oh, I guess I can take the other. So the first step is to introduce the triads. And in fact, we could just write an action where we replace the metric with the triads. And that would give us a triad action. I'm not sure how it's called. but we do one step more. We go to a so-called first order action. First order action, you might have seen, are actions which look like actions which depend also on the momenta or on the first derivatives. So in this case, we actually introduce a connection, the connection which is kind of a derivative from the matrix, as an independent variable. And so that's actually what is meant with Palatini, because there's also a matrix Palatini formulation. That's where you take the matrix and the Christoffel symbol, which is not the Christoffel symbol, but just the connection, as independent variables. So here we need another kind of connection because we have introduced also internal indices. And so we need a connection on top of the Christoffel connection, which allows us to make covariant derivatives also for objects which carry this internal index. Okay, and so we will first derive this connection, and this connection is called a spin connection. So it's a connection to deal with the I indices. So we had the usual space-time connection, which was gamma rho sigma. If you remember, well, maybe I should write what the definition is. So I use Nabla for the space-time covariant derivative. So the covariant derivative of a vector v mu is defined by applying the connection to the vector plus the partial derivative. So you see here that we need a connection always needs one index, one spacetime index, because that comes with a direction into along which the derivative is taken. and it needs two indices of the same type as your vector index. So here there is no difference because everything is in tangent space. but if you have an internal index, it makes a difference. So we define a covariant derivative of any object, frankly I call it phi, with an internal index, also by introducing a connection which we will call omega. Now, as I said, it has two indices which give you, which allow you to contract this internal vector indices index and then give you the new index for this side. And then, as before, you take just the partial derivative of your internal object. So if you want to have a bunch of properties for this connection, for instance, that d rho phi j lambda j, this you want, for instance, just to be given by the partial derivative. So you can deduce what the derivative should be if you have an object with an index down. And that should be, again, the partial derivative. Now it's basically minus. And here, as with the Christoffel symbol, if you have something with a lower index, you contract with the upper index, mu j. Yeah?
Why do we have two connections? Is it because we have two different kind of symmetries? Because the omega is like another connection, right?
Yeah, the omega, as we will see, is just there for the internal indices. And in fact, if you have an object now, if you know, so this d rho will actually find the totally covariant derivative. If you have an object which has, say, two indices, where there's an index, an internal index, and this index, you just add the different connections. (clears throat) in fact, yeah, you, in principle, you are right. So you can formulate everything more abstractly, just that I don't think at this point is so useful. So if you introduce the internal index, technically you introduce some kind of additional fiber bundle for these frames. And for this bundle, you need also a connection to connect between the different fibers. Okay, so here you take a first confused with indices. First, the covariant derivative, the spacetime covariant derivative. And then you add your spin connection. So it's similar to if you have a Christoffel symbol, if you have your spacetime connection and you have three spacetime indices, you just do everything for every separate index. So here it's the same idea. Okay, but so far we haven't said much about omega, except that these rules but we can think of a condition which would make our spin connection particularly useful. So for instance, actually the Christoffel symbol really arises from two conditions on the spacetime connection. Remember, what are these two conditions? Metricity, and then there was another one.
Torsion freeness.
So yeah, metricity is actually that the covariant derivative of your metric vanishes, and also the inverse metric vanishes. The covariant derivative of your inverse metric vanishes, and so this allows you to even to commute pulling up and down indices with the covariant derivative. Torsion freeness is that the covariant derivative on scalars is equal to the partial derivative. And for the Christoffel symbols, that these indices are symmetric. So we will come to that again. So here, we will actually also see that the condition we will impose will actually also impose some kind of metricity with respect to the internal metric, if we actually have the Christoffel metric. But here we can even ask for something stronger. Namely, we have seen here what we should actually demand if we want to have a non-degenerate metric, and which we implicitly used here, is that our frame field is actually invertible. And so you can actually take that as a transformation between an internal index and a spacetime index. In fact, it transforms tangent vectors to internal vectors. So we can see Eij and Ei mu and E mu I as translations between these two kind of indices. So what we could demand is that we can also do that inside and outside our covariant derivative. And so this would be satisfied So to satisfy that, it means you need to be able to pull out always the frames, Q-frames, tetrads, triads, fieldbinds, whatever you want to call them. I think we demand that for, in fact, the Q-frames. So we want this to be zero, that's the condition. And so this has one internal index up and one spacetime index down, so you can exactly write the condition, which is here. Okay. This vanishes. So that's just this definition applied to the Q-frame. And so you can contract that. If you want to know what are the spin connection coefficients, you can contract that with the triad itself to get rid of this coefficient. And so you get the result that the spin connection is given by applying the space-time covariant derivative to the co-tetrad and then contracting it with the triad with a triad. And if you write it out, it's a combination where the Christoffel symbol appears and where you have the triads appearing, covariant derivative. Let me get it up. Oh, yeah. So gamma is a function of the space-time matrix. So the space-time matrix you can again express as a function of the triads. So you get actually the spin connection fixed as a function of the triads completely. and then sometimes this in particular is called the spin connection. So if gamma is a Levi-Civita tensor, as a Levi-Civita connection, it will satisfy certain properties which also implement metricity and torsion freeness, but in a way which is exactly opposite to the Christoffel symbol. So we will discuss that in the next lecture. And then we will actually relax one of these two conditions, will be actually torsion freeness, to treat the omega as a free variable in our action. And then we will actually see that we, with a little computation, we get a very simple action for 3D gravity, where the equations of motion will be quite easy to derive, and more importantly, we can make a simple canonical analysis, which then allows us to go to quantization. Okay, any questions so far? Have you seen the spin connection before? I think I heard it has been discussed in the GR course. In the exercises. Okay. Okay. Thank you. So the next lecture, it's 1 hour, no? It's 1 hour. The next lecture is Thursday at 9:00.